I'm Pat McClure speaking to you from Sacramento in a neighborhood where oaks are being felled all day long on a schedule that is beyond mine to change. So at the last minute, I scavenged the bishop's headphones, hoping that they might modulate the sound some. So Tim, they're grinding away. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you just fine. I think your headset's doing a good job.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you very much. Well, it's wonderful to see all the screens here, all of you coming to join us this morning to engage the intelligence of your minds and your hearts with an encounter with the sacred feminine. The feminine principle has come to life again in our cultural experience over the last century. And it's the title of chapter 2 in our book, Sacred Earth, Sacred Soul. St. Bridget of Kildare is the compelling figure from Celtic history and tradition who exemplifies this cosmic archetype. Let me give you the intent of the chapter with the words of the author. St. Bridget embodies the beauty and strength of the sacred feminine, which is deep within us all. Stories of her life call forth the dimension of the divine in us, that we may be strong again to serve the interrelationship of all things within us, between us, and among us in the world. As Judith said, our speaker today, Catherine Collis, will look familiar to you because you met her 2 weeks ago when she overviewed the book in dialogue with its author, John Philip Newell. Catherine brings a depth of knowledge about the Celtic worldview from 35 years of leading retreats and pilgrimages to the island of Iona in Scotland. She's a Findhorn Fellow, co-founder and minister of the Lorien Association, and a millionth circle convener and group facilitator with Jean Shinoda Boland's work. After nearly a decade of working closely with Santa Barbara's La Casa de Maria and the Center for Spiritual Renewal until their closure 4 years ago, she is now in private practice and teaching online. This morning, she'll set the stories and the mindset of St. Bridget and her time squarely in the midst of our own time, where they resonate so well with what's happening today. But just before we do that, as Judith had said earlier, we have reinduced last week what is, we think, a special tradition of word and life that blesses our speakers as we welcome them to the podium. Each time we would sing the little words and song that Tom Heck composed and raised our hands kind of like this in benediction as we sang it for our speaker. Christine Milne, again, will sing for us this morning, and Tim is going to show us the whole gallery with, as you listen, your hands up toward Catherine, blessing her contribution this morning. So take it away, Christine.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Thanks, Christine. Well, dear Catherine, welcome back. The podium is yours.
Thank you so much. And please, Pat or Tim, if my voice drops a little bit and you can't hear me, please let me know.
I'll do.
Call out. It's a little low this morning, especially. So I can only say it's really a joy to be with you all again. This morning, and for those of you in other places, whatever time of day you're in, I have been sitting with the invitation to give this talk this morning for the last month, and really how I want to approach what I share with you today is as a companion, sister who has been exploring this theme my whole life, at least as long as I can remember. And really what I learn about the sacred feminine is what I learn when I'm in conversation with others, which is why I love being in circle, being in community, being in conversation. So I want to just launch into this as if we're sitting around a table and we're sipping tea or coffee and we're conversing together what we are learning in our hearts. I want to begin by welcoming Allie. I saw you, your little box there with your name on it from Scotland. And I just need to begin by saying, I first discovered you, Alison Newell, and your husband, John Philip Newell, on one of my trips to Iona. And it was, I'm not even sure which year it was in. I probably in the late 90s, or I'm not sure when you were joint wardens of the Iona community. But it was one of those years, and you were brand new to the island, and I was curious who these new wardens of the Abbey were. And so I went to Sunday service, and I was sitting in the pews and listening to the sermon and the songs and just deeply grateful to be on Iona. I had recently arrived. And all of a sudden, when it came for the Eucharist, there you were with John Philip standing at the high altar. And as you lifted up the sacraments to be blessed, I have such a vivid memory of you, Alison, lifting up the chalice and calling on St. Bridget, calling on St. Margaret. And then John Philip lifting up the sacraments and calling on St. Patrick and calling on St. Columba. And I looked up and the sun had just come out and there was light streaming through the four stained glass windows that sit around that high altar place of all four of those cornerstone saints of the Celtic Christian Church. And in that moment, I felt something break open in me because my search had always been, I wished I had been called into ministry, except I could never fully align my inner knowing with some of what I heard within the different churches. And I looked everywhere. I was on a search. And in that moment, I knew I was deeply a part of the Christian faith. The Christian faith being articulated and being honored in a way that included the spirit that I was filled with. So a very personal sort of moment in my life, and I followed you both ever since and have really valued John Philip's articulation of what his discovery of journey, the journey of uncovering this wisdom of the Celtic Christian household. In looking at this book, I think it speaks more powerfully than all the previous books to me and reveals to me that John Philip in what he's writing about here is deeply stirring, I think, for our time and awakening something even more than listening, inner listening, as his book, Listening to the Heartbeat of God, spoke to. It's about inner knowing and reconciling inner knowing with what we have lived and learned and the knowledge gained through our history. And last 2 weeks ago, I asked John Philip, you know, why we saw on his website that he had left the position of being an ordained minister in the church. And when he spoke, I was deeply touched because I realized the courage that his step had taken. And not as a withdrawal from the Christian household or the the faith or the tradition, but actually I saw it as a deepening further into it and being able to speak in a way that brings people back into that living relationship with God, with the divine, with God, with Christ. I remember a conversation we had many years ago, a brief encounter, and he said something. All of the sort of called New Age people that I would bring to Iona on pilgrimage who were not fully in the church had rebelled or reacted in some way. He said this, and actually two other wardens of the Iona community said, "Catherine, you're bringing more people back to the Christian faith than turning them away." And it was such a shock to me. But I realized, you know, in a sense, that's true to something that is living at the core and the root of what this tradition holds within its revelatory living core in the present. So anyway, I just want to honor him, John Philip. Thank you for this book. To speak about Bridget for a moment. You know, my many trips over 50 years to Iona have been an ongoing mystery. I was called there through a dream and discovered actually finding my way to Iona when I was 17 and have been going back ever since. But it's always been a mystery. What is it? Why is this call to Iona so strong for me? And I followed it. I followed it because every time I go, it's as if another page of understanding reveals itself. And I want to, before I speak of Bridget, I want to share something that there was a beautiful quote read by Reverend Gary Hall last week from John O'Donohue. And I want to thank Gary for what I thought was a wonderful, wonderful beginning to our exploring the chapters. I gained so much from that talk. Thank you. But this is a little book that John O'Donohue wrote called Stone as a Tabernacle of Memory. And he talks of memory as memoria, that which recalls us to what holds meaning and reverence and honor, to memory that is sacred. And he speaks to something also that Gary Hall spoke to last week, which is the awakening of the sacredness of place. And each of us has a relationship to place. And that is where we can begin what I'm going to read out. The presence of memoria is concealed and silent. As the tabernacle of memory, stone embodies this hidden presence. Because this presence in place, in stone, is concealed, it remains by us, on the most part, unnoticed. In contrast, our human presence is always a presence of immediacy. It is personal and never neutral. The passion of this presence impinges directly. It gathers and reaches relentlessly on outwards through the icon of the human face. The human face expresses the intimacy of a life and awakens and calls other intimacies towards it. But the presence of memoria in stone is mediated presence. It calls and engages those who take time and are sensitive in attention. It releases its depths to the one who approaches reverently. And he goes on to speak of this tabernacle of stone, that if we could but touch that presence, we could renew our sisterhood with nature and rescue ourselves from exile, cosmological exile, and make us each participants in the liturgy of the earth. And I bring this up because I think there's something about sacred places, holy places, where there has been reverence, whether it is the stone of a favorite chapel, whether it is a valley or a creek bed or a grove or a sacred island. These places hold this quality of presence, of memoria, not just carrying the memory of what humans have lived in that place, but of something even deeper. We touch, as is often said on Iona, we touch not the spirit of past, present, or future. We touch the presence of the eternal. And the eternal within matter, that our very earth itself is forged and holds within its core the very heart of love of the creation and of the Creator. And I bring this back to Bridget, which I was going to say. I know a number of you have seen this or even hold this cross that I am lifting to the screen. It's St. Bridget's cross. And what's so lovely about doing this talk today is that St. Bridget's Day is coming up on February 1st. And if we go to SpeakerView, there might be a few people who actually have a number of these crosses. There's Judith with hers anyway. apparently, some years ago, there was a lovely workshop done at La Casa de Maria that taught folks how to make the St. Bridget's cross. But why is St. Bridget's such a presence in that part of the Celtic world? I have a number of Irish friends who gather to celebrate St. Bridget's Day in as much presence and reverence and the activities of Christmas or of Easter. They go, for those who can, they go to the plains or the surroundings of Kildare and they pick the reeds or the grasses. And they bring them back and they lay them on the doorsteps of their friends, of those who can't travel. And on the eve of St. Bridget, they make their crosses and they say their prayers for the coming year. And if we understand the deeper meaning of what Bridget means, as John Phillips so beautifully wrote about this figure, both mythic and historical, ancient and still present in the psyches and the imaginations and the visions of many, many people. Her representation is of abundance, of good life, of the greening of things, of the birthing of things, of the promise of what is in potential that we can help bring into being. And the importance of that time to set not just our intentions for the new year, but to call on those forces within all realms of creation and of life to support us in what we are called to do through the coming years. And there's all sorts of little rituals that are associated with it. And for me, coming from United States and not really having a background in that part of the world, to some of the folklore and some of the stories. Bridget was initially sort of an interesting character. You know, I could relate to Mary or Guadalupe for that matter. And if we really look at all cultures, whether it's La Negrita or Inanna or Kuan Yin or Tara, we all have our sacred feminine figures who speak to different cultures. But Bridget was a bit of a mystery, and I began to read more about her. And I found the number of stories, and when I would lead workshops, I would tromp with my groups across Iona to different spots, and we'd sit and tell stories and share and talk, and I would do some of these readings. Well, an interesting thing I began noting, the first time I did this was in the old ruins of St. Mary's Chapel. And I learned from the elders on Iona that actually the Iona Abbey was originally before Henry VIII or V was the was Mary's Cathedral. And the elders on the island, many of them still called it, you know, I'm going to Mary's Cathedral on Sunday. Would you like to come? And that touched me very deeply. And so I found that I would always explore underneath the abbey to the deeper ruins, the 9th century ruins, the 12th century, always these layers of history that reside in all of our places, really. But this notion of Mary and Bridget being the Mary of the Gauls really intrigued me. So sitting in a circle on stones with about 16 people, I began reading these stories, and all of a sudden a fully grown mature sheep came in to the center of our circle, and it came and it lay its head upon my lap as I was reading. And when I finished the story, it got up and it went to every single person in a circle and lay its head upon the lap of each person. And then when it had finished, it walked out. And I thought, well, what is this? I've never seen this before. And I thought, well, this is maybe just one of those lambs that was, you know, hand fed and is used to humans. But it was interesting the way it actually circumnavigated the whole circle and touched each person and then left. Every time I read about Bridget on the island, something interesting would happen. I once had a group with two people, one who was almost fully deaf and another who was partly deaf and needed hearing aids. And in walking the island with the whistling wind and so on, they had left their hearing aids behind. And as we sat up on top of the hill, Dunee, which again is described by John Philip, there's a well there, the well of eternal youth that's attributed to a well of one of the many wells of Bridget. I began reading and telling her story, and all of a sudden these two people just said, oh my gosh, stop, stop, stop. We're hearing every word you're saying. Our hearing's been restored. And it was just one of these phenomenal moments. And I thought, what is this? And another time, wild geese would just descend and surround our circle as they were passing overhead. And so I began to go, what is this connection between Bridget and these signs from nature? That there's something, actually a living presence that is there, that is touched in our hearts when we open in a way. And I can only think of St. Francis. I can only think of that greatness of heart that so loves every creature, so loves every part of creation, that Bridget also is imbued with. And she's really known as the patron saint of poetry, of healing, of birth, of course, as midwifing, and also of smithery, of the forging. She's the goddess of the forge. which is symbolic also of what we temper within ourselves and build and create, not just in word, but in deed, in the matter that we, and the substance of our lives that we forge through our living. So I've come to really, again, a mystery of respecting that there's something deeply there. And as John Philip writes about, you know, the midwife to the Christ within ourselves, to that Christed nature, that Christ consciousness. There's something also about the suckling, the nurturing, the nursemaid to the Christ. What is it that nurtures that life within us? And we sometimes think of that connection to God or to Jesus or to Christ or to Spirit as being something of a one-way street. We open ourselves, we say a prayer, we make the connection. But we sometimes miss what's in between of what nurtures that. What helps us forge and form that relationship? Again, I was very struck by John Philip's description of the four liminalities of Bridget. And it spoke very closely to me because that's something that I have been studying. What is this threshold space, this liminal space that brings together that which has been rent apart? What is that quality that reconnects and helps heal the fractures or brings together the dimensions, the different dimensions, the different realms, the different vastness and intimacy of the cosmos and the heart, cell and soul, the divine transcendent and the divine immanent? What is that quality that brings those together? And if ever we are in a liminal time, we certainly are in one now, one that's affecting us physically, emotionally, mentally, socially, culturally, environmentally, within the planet itself. Where we have been, we don't know where we're going. It's a new territory. We're on a new journey of discovery. But ever more important is that we begin to develop that sensitivity that the suppressed sacred feminine actually has dampened and numbed within us. And my sense, as I think of, there's a couple of things I want to say. I had a dream at the beginning of last year, and the dream was very simple. I just heard the words, the most important thing to do in response to our planetary crisis is to restore your ways of knowing. And this book speaks to that. What are the deep ways we know in the commonplace, the sacred in the commonplace, the holy in the everyday, the divine within matter, the intelligence, the innate intelligence at the heart of every life form, the sentiency of life? And how can we be in relationship with that? And we can't be in relationship unless we realize we've been closed down in many, many ways by the lost traditions and teachings and wisdom of the feminine. Because the embodied feminine understands what it is to bring spirit into life through the body, to incarnate a soul and give it substance and give birth to it. And that knowledge is probably, for me, the most essential knowledge that we need to regain and understand of how that works, because we are in a place where we need to bring in a quality of consciousness, a quality of spirit, a quality of understanding, a quality of compassion that we have held in our ideals for thousands of years, We've held in our longing. We've held in our prayers. But it's time. We must begin to bring that in and give it form. We must call in that nobility of the human spirit, not in its fracturedness, but in its its transfiguration, its reconfiguration. And I think that that's the work of our time. And that's, for me, what stirred most in this chapter. I have a few more minutes before we go into our breakout. I want to mention a couple of books that I think are really wonderful. Two of them are written by a woman named Alice O'Howe. And I will give Judith the contact so you have it. This one is called Web in the Sea, The Web in the Sea. And the first book is called The Dove in the Stone. And it's Finding the Sacred in the Commonplace. And Gary mentioned last week why that split between the household and the sacred, the split that happened within the early phases of the church, of our theology. But in that separation and fracturing and not bringing those together, we lost also Sophia. We lost holy wisdom. And Sophia in our Western tradition is, for me, that quality that is deeply embedded in our Judeo-Christian heritage. And to recover Sophia, to recover wisdom in the commonplace is what we are called to do. Because when that's awakened and when that's stirred within us, we behave and act differently. These two books speak to that wisdom, to how Sophia shows up everywhere. The other book that is very important for me personally is a book by Catlin Matthews. She and her husband, John Matthews, are Celtic scholars, and they sort of explore many different facets of the Celtic tradition. Both Christian and earlier Druidic knowledge and research that they've done. But Catlin's book on Sophia is a seminal piece, and I highly recommend it for anyone interested in this topic, because it again shows how the feminine, the Sophia, is everywhere. She's everywhere if we but have the eyes to see. She's actually not been totally suppressed. So in thinking there's women here and people within this community who could probably do this topic very well in bringing forth more knowledge. But at the heart of my own journey is the recognition in my early life of where we've lost this wisdom in relationship, in how we look at education and how we school our children, how we even view our children, how we view one another. And this fracturing shows up in so many ways that are impacting each of us personally, right here and now in our lives, our medical community, our medical institutions, how we're dealing with mental illness and understanding mental illness or even addiction, how we have compassion, how we reach into that deeper place of understanding. I think just to bear mention, because we probably won't have time to, but the passing of Thich Nhat Hanh points to his teaching, which is about this deep, deep understanding. he speaks about this wonderful way of analogies with nature. He has a quote about lettuce. If you haven't read it, you've got to go find out Thich Nhat Hanh and lettuce. When lettuce doesn't grow well, we don't blame the lettuce. We blame, oh my gosh, it doesn't have enough light or water, or it's too hot or too cold. It doesn't have the nutrients to grow. And if we could but behold one another in much the same way as we might look at a plant, a flower, a tree in our garden, that it's not the blame to blame the person for being wrong. It's to understand that the nutrients have not been there. And so when you grasp that level to understand and then to provide what is needed to nurture, then we begin to heal the fractures. We begin to heal those divisions. And the loss of the feminine is a story, as Joseph Campbell and others who have looked back at the different epochs and chapters of human history seem to be pretty much across the board of our planet, where there's been earlier very strong matriarchal cultures, and then for whatever reason a shift, and much of that feminine knowledge that was held then sort of sublimated or lost or incorporated or named in different ways. And as Pat was saying at the beginning, this is an awakening of the feminine. But I believe in a new way, and we may not even fully have the language. I think our younger generations who are suddenly breaking open the sexual roles are also pointing to us that there is a fluidity we must begin to have in terms of understanding the nature of how we've held and put everything into boxes in order to understand it. So the last few words I just wanna share before we break out into questions, our breakout groups, and then come back for questions and further discussion, is just the word trivialized. I was really surprised when I learned that the word trivialize actually the root is a word that we use in our everyday language and we don't understand what we're meaning. Trivialized is what was brought to shame and diminish and suppress what was the ultimate in feminine wisdom, in my perspective. It means trivia. It means the three sites. It means the crossroad of the pathways that one decides in one's life. And going back into pre-Christian times, Hecate, the goddess of the crossroads, who represented and awakened in us that three levels of seeing and of knowing, which the Celts really embraced in. There are some in this group who've studied with Fionn Tuilag and the teachings of the Cailí Dé or the Chaldee tradition, which in that teaching speaks to, as well as other Celtic scholars, that there was an understanding in the Celtic worldview, which Bridget represents, not only liminality between these four levels, humanity and the earth, that which we're holding in potential in our womb and that which seeks to be born, that which lives within the past wisdom of previous traditions to the tradition we hold, the liminality that comes between the divine and nature, God and the earth. But there's also the understanding that the liminality is a place, a space where all three worlds meet. The spiritual, the psychological, the physical. That place which is pure presence, the inner chamber, the inner room of pure presence. of no thingness. Not nothingness, but no thingness, into the realm of the imaginal, the soul, the field of potentiality, and then to that which we know through our physical world, our senses. And enlightenment is not one above the other, doesn't privilege one of the other. It's about our consciousness being able to move between all three. The dance of the Trinity. Another perspective that I've come to appreciate and learn from the Celtic world. And so for us to know where, what parts of ourselves have been trivialized is really, really important in regards to our awakening to our inner knowing. And if we understand the sacred in all of nature, and we come back to Gary's last words about the body, the sacred in our own bodies, we are made up of intelligence, physical intelligence, cellular intelligence, sensual intelligence, emotional intelligence, mental intelligence. Each aspect of our being holds a capacity or is a face of the divine. If we could but have eyes and ears to sense, to hear, to see, and to awaken to that within ourselves is such, to me, is what is happening in so many ways. As we do that and look at what wisdom we've been cut off from about ourselves, we're in a time of that awakening in so many exciting ways through our science, through our understanding of neuroscience, psychology. And in that space, as we begin to understand the sacredness in all things and where they meet in that divine presence that exists within everything, if we, as John O'Donohue said, have the sensibility to slow down enough and hear, see, no memoria in place, that what comes through is a reawakening of all of our levels of knowing. And it's that which Bridget calls us to. It's that which her spirit awakens, a level of sensitivity, tenderness, intimacy, beholding the beauty of one another, of calling one another forth, of seeing the child as a full intelligence within his or herself, all the way until those last dying days of the sacred in every phase, in every facet, in every face. And that aliveness and vitality and health that comes when we're reconnected to our whole is what is needed now. And as we discover that in one another, we discover it in our relationships, we begin to see its outplay and make different decisions of how we cook, of how we shop, of how we choose resources, of what we support, of who we support. Anyway, it's time for our breakout rooms. And I just want to finish this last little bit about Bridget, because this prayer, it speaks to me of her spirit. Her spirit, which speaks about the greening of the earth and about what we are being called to as humanity now, the regreening of the earth. Anyway, when we behold the essence of this prayer, we get, I think, her spirit. John Philip spoke of it last or 2 weeks ago. It's called A Celtic Rune of Hospitality. We saw a stranger yesterday. We put food in the eating place, drink in the drinking place. And with the sacred name of the triune God, we were blessed, us and our house, our cattle and our dear ones. As the lark often says in her song, often, often, often goes the Christ in the stranger's guise. And when we behold everything as that stranger, the snail, the tree, the person at our door, our planet, every life form, and we can bring that hospitality of our heart, we have a hope for our world. So now to our questions, Tim. And really the questions can be, how has the sacred feminine awakened within you? And also, if you resonated to any of those four areas of Bridget's liminality, you might think in your group of discussing how do you bridge the wisdom of other traditions with your own? How do you bridge the divine and the human? Awakening your own compassion, seeing the divine within others, acting on behalf of all peoples. The liminality of bridging humanity and nature. How are you called to be a steward of this planet, of the resources within your domain? And the liminality of bridging the womb of the universe and what is trying to come into being. What is newly breaking through that you see emerging in yourself and the world? So those are a number of questions, but I just speak of what you're discovering in any of those arenas for you to share together. And I'll see you back after your breakout rooms.